Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host and the producer of Right Here, Right Now is Andy Lowe. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dr. Tim.
I haven't asked you about Renegade Radio for a while. How's that one going?
It's, you know, breaking all the rules like normal. Yeah. Oh, doing everything we're not supposed to do.
You're learning from Stone, or you're teaching him new tricks.
Yeah, suddenly the student has become the master.
Well, there we go. There we go.
So, hey, so what's on tap for season two? Last week was the anniversary show.
Yes,
and,
it was.
And now we're starting officially season two. So what do we got on
two.
Top?
Oh, hey, we are starting season two. I never thought of it in that way. This makes it all the more special. Wow. Our guests should feel really special. Actually, we're starting season two with a different kind of theme this morning. Both authors have written about the miraculous. My guests are business professionals. They're licensed or certified professionals who wrote about the miraculous in their own lives. You know, on Right Here, Right Now, we bring to our listeners a variety of personal stories and writing adventures. And the whole idea is to provide encouragement for others in their writing adventures. And today's topic is not one usually associated with business. However, both guests are engaged in business, and each intends for his or her book to have an impact on lives and on their businesses. And as I was waiting for us to go into this, Andy, I'm sitting here with a bulging disc, and I've got a chiropractor across from me, and on the airwaves through phone, I've got a healer. I think I'm in good stead today, you know?
We just need to get a table in here.
Yeah, one way or another, we're going to go out of here better than I came in. Well, my first guest is Judith McNutt. She's a licensed psychotherapist, and she's had a private practice for many years. And for several decades, Judith has joined psychotherapy with healing prayer. And in her book, Angels Are For Real, and Judith pulls back the curtain. I love that phrase that she has on her book. She pulls back the curtain on these intriguing beings and offers insight, and stories of miraculous encounters and healing and hope that have emerged from those encounters. And she does join us by phone from her home in Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning and welcome, Judith.
Good morning, Dr. Tim. It's really wonderful to be on your show today.
Well, I got to tell you, it's an absolute honor, privilege, and delight for me to have you on Right Here, Right Now. I think it was, it's got to be at least 7 years ago when last our paths crossed, and I was in Jacksonville for your week-long adventure on Leaders in Healing Ministry, and that was just an amazing adventure.
Oh, yes. That's a great experience for the leaders that come.
Yeah. And I had some stuff happen that I never, but you probably hear that all the time, things that happen that we never thought would happen. But we're here to talk about you. You co-authored with your husband, Francis, Praying for Your Unborn Child, correct?
Yes. Many years ago now. Great little book.
Is this Angels Are For Real your first solo book?
It is. It's the first time I've written solo, and it was quite an adventure.
Well, talk to us about that adventure, because Francis, he's put out a bunch of books, right?
He's got about 12 out now, I think.
That's a bunch, yeah. So what motivated you to write this and to write your very own first book?
Well, I'd been encouraged for several years by people to write a book on, because I am a psychotherapist, on inner healing and kind of emotional healing. And I always thought that would be my first solo book. But then several years ago, while I was in prayer, I felt like God really wanted something written on angels that would kind of clear the air on the subject. There's so many books that don't really represent angels in the light of, say, the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
So after it was interesting. I started teaching on angels at some of our conferences and seminars, and then people started sending me stories. I had these remarkable stories that were true life experiences. And, you know, being a therapist, I could tell whether these people, you know, were kind of out there and just kind of thinking they'd had an angel experience. But these were everyday, good, hardworking people, very clear, very sane, that we're turning in these stories. And I thought, you know, we need somebody needs to write a book that will encourage people in this area and use good sound research and scripture and then true stories. So that's kind of how it came about.
Well, I like that, and I'm going to I'll give you two solid points as to why. First off, and I do this for myself with my own books and with most of my guests, I go to Amazon, and I type in one of the words from the title. So yesterday I typed in angels. 71,214 entries on Amazon dealing with angels. But see, what this points out, and this is what I tell my clients, is that there's really nothing new to be written by anyone. What is new is our personal perspective, our learning, our teachings, and our insight. And I have read a number of books on angels. I've read Billy Graham's book on angels. Golly, I'm trying to think. I'm blanking. David Jeremiah wrote a book on angels. I've read that. Yes. And then I've read some of those others that you alluded to that have no scriptural basis to them. I really like yours. It is solid. I was going to ask you, how did you get stories? And you've just kind of answered that. You mentioned it, and people just tell you stories.
Well, it's interesting, Tim, because, you know, we travel extensively in America and outside of America, and people are always reluctant to share their stories unless they think that you're open to that, because they don't want you to think they're strange or weird. So when I just broach the subject, even if I don't give a whole presentation on it, that people will come up and say, I'd love to share something with you. You know, you seem to be open to this. And and some of them are incredible stories about God's intervention to really save a life or to heal. And I thought, boy, these are too great not to share.
Well, I like your emphasizing that again, and the fact that you said you are a licensed psychotherapist, so you have a sense of what's nonsense and what's real and maybe in between. There are two stories that I would share with you out of my own experience. The first time I ever heard anyone really talk publicly about an angel was what we would call the Association or Associate Conference Minister in the United Church of Christ, where I served for a number of years. Our bishops, so to speak, were called conference ministers, and this was an associate conference minister. And he told about driving home one night after a long day at a church conference, and he got pulled over by the police, and he was just befuddled, and he couldn't understand, because he knew he wasn't speeding. Well, what the police officer said to him was, for the past 30 miles, he had crept up, my friend Clip had crept up on the tail of a tractor trailer three times, and the driver was absolutely convinced that Clip was going to go right into him, and so he called the police for help. Turns out that Clip was just tired, and the police officer said to Clip, you must have an angel protecting you to have kept you from running into the truck. I'm going to take you to an exit, take you into a restaurant. You're going to drink a cup of coffee for yourself, one for your children, one for your wife, and one for the angel that protected you. And when I heard that story after, you know, like anybody else knowing about angels some way or another, I said, wow. And for a man who's a judicatory leader to say this to the people, those are the kinds of the stories that you get, aren't they?
Yes. So similar to that, where just intervention saved their life. It's just extraordinary. And it's every day. And it's in things like that story, Tim, you know. Some people tend to think, and I've had a few people mention this to me, they say, oh, some of the stories are too simple, or, you know. And I said, no, the reason I wrote this is I want people to know that angels are involved every day in all of our circumstances. You know, and I think some of us think of them as just these celestial beings way out there, you know, very holy, not interacting with humans. And they're very actively involved in our lives, that story you shared.
Yeah. Can you remember the story? Okay, I'm biased, but it's about the little boy, Timmy.
Oh, yes. That's one of my favorites.
Would you share that with our listeners?
I'd be happy to. Francis and I, my husband, we were conducting a conference in a very large church, big sanctuary. And this mother brought her little boy, Timmy, up for healing prayer. Her husband had recently left the family and was not coming back. He was with another woman. And, of course, the wife was crushed. But the little boy, he just adored his dad, and he was suffering from depression. And you really could see it on his face. He kind of was behind his mom, clinging to her skirt. Little boy, just so cute. And we prayed over them, and then they went back to their seats. And after a time, every now and then, God lets me kind of glimpse into that realm.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I became aware of an angel high above the altar on this wooden beam. And that angel was looking directly at Timmy.
Oh, my.
And Timmy was looking directly at the angel. And so I went back to the seat beside him, and I said, "Would you mind telling me, what are you looking at?" And he looked at me for a moment. He was probably about 6 or 7. And he said, you'll think I'm making this up. And I said, "No, I won't. What is it?" And he said, "There's a very large, like glowing man sitting on the wooden beam up there, and he's staring at me." And I said, "Do you know that's an angel?" I said, "I think we're the only two people in the room that can see that angel."
Oh, my.
And I said, "Why do you think God lets you see that angel?" And he thought about it for a minute or two, and then he said, "I think God wants me to know that since my daddy's gone, he sent someone to watch over me and be with me all through my life." And I said, "You're exactly right. That's
Whoa.
Your guardian angel."
Whoa.
And I saw such a transformation in that little boy, because I know depression when I see it. I've mm-hmm. worked with depression for years and my clients. I just saw that little boy transform. He got so excited and his eyes lit up. It was just a beautiful moment in time.
Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine.
Yes.
What challenges did you have in writing this book?
Well, I think that for me, because I am president of, a small business, really, and I travel and I lecture, I have a family. For me, carving out the time was the greatest challenge. And I finally, for years, wanted to write the book, and I finally, our children are now adults, and I finally had to say, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And I just took the time. Now, this is kind of interesting, Tim. I've had many people encourage me to write, but I'm more comfortable as a public speaker, which some people are terrified of. But a blank page is very frightening to me. There's just something within me that struggled with that. And I would go to in my room. I wrote here at home in a little room that I'd prepared. I'd go in my room, and I would sit in the chair, and I would pray. And I told God, I said, "I'm going to sit here all day, whether I have any inspiration or not." And I did. I stayed there except for lunch breaks all day, every day for 4 months.
Oh, my.
And I had to write 45,000 words for the publisher.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote 80,000.
Oh, my.
So I basically wrote 2 books in 4 months.
Yes, you did.
And I thought they'd be happy. I had written 80,000. And they said, "Oh, no, we only have this much allotted for the size of the book." So the other one will probably, if this one does as well as it started, it seems to be doing, they want to publish a second one a few years down the road.
Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting.
It really is. But for me, it was a challenge. My husband writes very easily.
Mm-hmm.
He just seems to have this great gift. But for me, it was more a discipline.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the research, and not only in Scripture, but in the church tradition, and then assembling all the stories, it's definitely work.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's what I want people to hear from as many of my guests as I can, that it's fun, but it's work.
It is work. It's definitely work.
I got to tell you, while you were sharing that, I just opened the book randomly, and so that means I'm into something here. But on page 117, I love this story from Anonymous. Our grandchildren sometimes like me to lie on the bed next to them as they go to sleep. And one night, my four-year-old grandson was restless and told me, "I don't want to close my eyes because I might see monsters." And I explained that if he asked Jesus to come into his dreams and bring his guardian angel, they would keep the monsters away. And he said the prayer, then he closed his eyes and said, "Grandma, could you move over a little, please? My angel needs more room."
I think that's a great story.
I do, too. And the idea that, you know, we as parents and grandparents have the opportunity to help our children accommodate a society that is filled with monsters, or as the old prayer used to go, ghoulies and ghosties and long-legged beasties and things that go bump in the night. And
yes.
If we would just talk to them about simple things like that, it would make such
yes.
a difference. Well, what has been your own personal experience with angels?
Well, I first started experiencing kind of the angelic realm early on in my life. I had parents, especially my mother, that, you know, prayed for people for healing and
yeah.
believed very much in God and the supernatural realm and loved the Bible. She was very grounded in Scripture, and she made us aware, and then my father later, of the realm around us. You know, she said, there's a supernatural realm, God's realm, all around us. And I saw people healed in my home when I was growing up several times, lots of times. And so I believed in a God that was good, that was supernatural, that had power to change and intervene in their daily lives. So from a young age, I had experiences with angels. And then as I grew older, that just increased.
That's great. That's great. Well, Judith, what advice would you give to others who might want to write a book?
Well, you know, I think for me personally, there's two things. If you really have something to say that you feel will encourage people, that will help people's lives become better and more focused in a healthy way. You know, I've read so many good books in psychology that it really helped me in my career to understand people. You know, so something that you feel that you know. Like you said, Tim, there's really nothing new under the sun but your own perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Can really bring a deeper dimension of understanding and empathy for others, maybe, and wisdom, just wisdom. And then the second thing, and this is something that can almost block to me, I thought, who am I to write a book about angels?
Mm.
I really don't know a lot about them, you know, when you come right down to it, but I know more than the average person. So I thought, I have had these wonderful experiences. I have heard these wonderful stories. This is something that's very important in God's kingdom. It's mentioned over 300 times in the Bible,
mm-hmm.
for goodness sake, and nobody understands it, or the average Christian doesn't. So I thought, I don't have to know everything. I just have to have something that's important to say. And those are the two things that help me the most, I think.
Great, great. Well, folks might want to be in contact with you, Judith. Purchase a copy of your book. Learn more about Christian Healing Ministries. How should they be in contact with you?
Well, we have a wonderful website. It's called, the address is Christian Healing Men, M-I-N, short for ministry. So it's ChristianHealingMen.org. That's the best way. We actually have a bookstore where the book can be ordered. Of course, the book is also available on Walmart, Amazon, Christian bookstores. Choice Books has it. There's
okay.
quite a few sources. It's in about 8 different languages already.
Oh, my goodness.
That, you know, it's in the process of coming out
you're
in other languages. So
you're a serious writer already.
Well, it just kind of took off. It's done very well, and I believe that God wanted it, and that's why it has his favor, certainly.
Great. Well, here comes the question, and I gave you the opportunity to back out, but if you're willing to stay on the line, I'm going to go shift over and interview Brad. I know you're at home and you need to get to work. Which option do you want?
Well, I think I'd like to hear Brad and then interact some,
okay.
So I'll stay on the line.
Okay,
yes.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much, Judith.
Thank you.
Well, Brad Schmidt was diagnosed with neuroblastoma as an infant. And in the aftermath of that diagnosis, he underwent 3 invasive surgeries. Brad was left unable to stand or even to begin to walk. And the medical team told Brad's parents that at best, Brad would spend the rest of his life in a wheelchair. Well, today Brad is a nationally ranked racquetball player. He's also a chiropractor who works with law firms as an accident investigator. And his book is called Where Does the Fight Come From? And in it, Brad tells of his lifelong battle in overcoming the effects of his fight with neuroblastoma, which included radiation, chemotherapy, learning how to walk, overcoming scoliosis, and a whole lot of other challenges. Well, welcome, Brad. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So what answer do you give to the question that is the title of your book, Where Does the Fight Come From?
Well, I think after reading the book and writing the book and having people come up to me and ask me that same question, it's hard to give a quick flip answer on that.
Mm-hmm. That's why I asked it.
Basically,
we've got time.
Right. Basically, where does the fight come from? I think the fight comes from just an innate ability to overcome that we all possess. We just don't dial into it enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's many, many different challenges in life, not just cancer, different types of physical conditions other than cancer that can be overcome. And I think people just have to dial into it. I'm not saying it's easy or my pathway was the best way or anything like that. I just found a way
mm-hmm.
to overcome all my challenges that came at me daily, weekly, monthly.
And it's kind of like what Judith and I were talking
right.
about. This is your story.
Right.
And it's how you went about battling. And that has a lot to share with others. How old were you when you were diagnosed?
I was born with the neuroblastoma tumor right next to my lower lumbar spine.
Oh, my.
It was diagnosed. I was born in August. I was diagnosed the following January. So I was less than a year old. And this is in the, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really know about neuroblastoma too much. There wasn't the, oncology group for children or anything like that had studies in this area. So there just wasn't anything that, there was no history of it,
mm-hmm.
Other than a few random cases. And so that's kind of how it came about.
Now, when I studied psychology, one of the things we learned, and you probably did as well, is our first real memories are when we turn about 3.
Mm-hmm.
And if we remember anything prior to that, it's because we've heard stories told.
Sure.
Where do you fit in on that? Because, sometimes traumatic stuff we do
sure.
remember.
Sure.
What's your recollection?
It's funny you say that. There are times during the day... I'll give you a quick example. I can smell something in a mall, walking around the public or the people. I'll smell a perfume, a cologne,
mm-hmm.
a smell, a cleaning solvent, something. And my mind will go back. It will flash up on my board of me in the hospital or in a situation where I was taking something or taking an x-ray or something, some experience. But as far as writing the book, when I sat quietly in a room and turned everything off, and I basically, not a seance, but lit a candle and tried to go back and remember
sure.
my first
oh, absolutely.
Childhood memory. I mean, really clear your head and your mind and the day and what's going on and just sit quietly and go back. And I just remember a checkered floor.
Wow.
I remember looking down at a black and white checkered floor, and that was the color of the floor. When I was, 2.5, 3 years old, I conferred it with my parents, and I said, I just remember this floor and baby blue walls.
Wow.
And my mother told me this was these were the places you were. They were, so it backed me up. I didn't have to ask to tell me the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember the hospitals have a smell.
Oh, sure they do.
They have a certain smell. Some are good, some are pleasant, some are bad.
Mm-hmm.
I can barely go to a hospital today. To witness the birth of a child of a friend or a family member or whatever, without some of these memories coming back, they automatically
sure.
click. It's sometimes difficult to click them off with that mental remote control, I guess. But
how old were you or young were you when you had your quote unquote last treatment?
Well, to go through it briefly, I had surgery within, I think I was about 9 months old was my first surgery. The surgeries were back to back to back. They were very quick. Back then they went in to just remove a tumor. Didn't really do any testing on it, just to get what they could get and get out of there without getting infections and whatnot. That led to not being able to stand up and walk and crawl as a baby. So that led to bracing, and it just kind of one thing led spidered into another thing. There was always some treatment, either for the cancer, for the inability to walk, the physical ailments that come with chemotherapy, losing my hair.
And this was even as a child?
As a child, as a toddler.
Yeah. Wow.
I remember going in for brace fittings, and you're growing, so you have to be refitted each time. Adjustments and going back and forth to this and that specialist. It was just a plethora of doctor's appointments in between trying to live a normal life of going to school.
And what does a young child do to try to live a normal life?
You know, I never really was prepared for it. I never really got guidance on it. I just went. They put you on that yellow school bus with a scoliosis brace on, and immediately you're ridiculed when those doors open. So that's just what I did. That's all my parents knew how to do, is you had to go to school. There was no homeschooling, or it just wasn't an option. I don't know, but I just went through the challenges of going to school. Some kids took care of me, some made fun of me, some were very kind, and some were cruel.
Now, to put it into a perspective, a scoliosis brace holds you erect,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, it's a metal contraption. It looks like I call it a medieval torture device because that's how I saw it. It was a device that wraps around your neck. It's got bars around your neck and bars that go down your back and the front of you to a plastic girdle-like pelvis that you have to be casted to fit into. So you have to go do a cast mold of your body to get one of those. And you wear that under your clothing and you immediately sweat and it's uncomfortable. It rubs on your skin. Mm. You have to wear a shirt in between your brace and your body. But you immediately, it's very hot and uncomfortable. And I had to wear it 23 hours a day. So
Wow. There
wasn't much time without it.
No, and, there would not be.
So...
Well, the thought that comes to my mind, the doctor said to your parents, he's not going to walk, he's not going to do any of that, but you don't know that.
No.
How was it that you began to walk or crawl and all that?
When I was at home, we had this long coffee table, long oak coffee table, and my father had a stereo in that extra living room, and I would lean up on the table and drag my leg with a brace on and walk and kind of try to dance to the music, but I would brace myself with my hands.
Oh, my.
And my mother would tell me to, be careful, you're going to fall, I started to, the straps on this thing were, on the leg brace were Velcro, metal clips and little attachments, and you can just pull them off. And I used to get reprimanded for pulling them off because I wanted that brace off. And because it just hurt to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother saw that there was movement, and my dad was like, just let him keep going and see what happens. So there was some neurological improvement, and how I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the innate ability in my body that showed its face. And I went to physical therapy.
Great. Well, what comes to my mind is that that's just an amazing example of we can do things if we're not told or if we don't understand. You can't do that.
Right.
Just like you're a nationally ranked racquetball player.
Correct. Thank you.
But you knew you weren't supposed to do that when that happened, right?
And my father allowed me to start that game, and I played by myself, and I took that brace off because I just interrupted my movement, and he allowed me. And it improved, and I felt better, and I wasn't complaining as much. But don't tell anybody. You're not supposed to take the brace off. And I said, but why? This is what I'm doing, and I'm improving, and it just kind of built on from there. Mm-hmm. And I told the doctors, you know, my curve was in, scoliosis curve was improving, and my complaints were down, and my blood levels were fine, and, you know, no cancer. And they said I was just growing out of it. So I said, okay,
good.
That's fine. That's fine. Well, let's just grow out of it then. All right. You know, so I just continued on.
Mm-hmm. And, great.
And
What motivated you to write your story?
Well, I've always been embarrassed about my story, to be honest with you. I you know, just from being, you know, jaded from being made fun of as a child, and I just wanted to be treated normally, mm-hmm. you know, as normal as possible. Go without a brace, and when I wear normal, you know, street clothes, you can't tell what I have going on. So it was just the perception to be normal.
Mm-hmm.
As far as writing the book, my mother gave me a couple boxes of books. This quick story is in the book as well. She called me up one day. They had some issues in their basement. She said, "There's some papers I want to give you. I don't want them to get wet or lost, or, you know, I finally feel comfortable giving them to you." And I said, "Well, you know," she goes, "Can you come over?" So I did, and I picked up these boxes, and I said, "What is it?" And she goes, "Oh, it's your baby things." And I said, "Well, we have a house with no basement, so where am I going to store all this stuff?" Well, I took them home, and a few weeks later, I was cleaning out my office, and I came across the boxes again, and I started to go through them, and I opened them up, and these boxes had been sealed for, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, some of them, and the paperwork in there was perfectly preserved, and it was everything from day one of my life, so... You know, all my paperwork from all the doctors, all the specialists, photographs, everything was in somewhat of an order, mm-hmm. and it was preserved perfectly. So I put it all in chronological order, took it all to the law firm, put it all on, copied everything, put everything away, took all the pertinent data that I needed, and I started to read it. And I said, I have everything I need right here to do a book. And a lot of these papers that I read and these names that I saw and the hospital names and all that brought all these memories back to me. I started to dream about it again. I said, I got to write all this down. And I started at 4. I remember I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I told my wife, I'm going to be a little freaky, if you will. I'm just going to start getting up really, really early. And before I go to racquetball, I'm going to write. And there it is. Yep.
What was the challenge for you in writing?
I think like your first guest stated, you don't feel comfortable. I've never written a book before. Mm-hmm. I think the only thing I've written are college essays and term papers and things like that. Mm-hmm. I never thought of myself as a writer, but it's when you start talking about something you're passionate about or something that you have knowledge of, I think it flows out of you.
Sure.
And if it's truthful and it just comes out, and okay. It did. So,
well, what's your advice to others who are contemplating writing a book?
As far as writing a book, I think everybody has a great idea. I think I've had a few people come up to me and ask me, "Well, I've got this idea, that idea." And I just tell them, you know what? Just take a tablet and just start writing. Don't plan the writing of. Just write things down in a book on a yellow tablet and put it away. If you don't think it's good, it doesn't matter. Just write it down anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I had several times where I was just, you know, on appointments or whatever, I'd take out a yellow tablet and jot down what I'm thinking. And it was jumbled. It sounded horrible. It wasn't in order. It's just get it down on paper and write your feelings down and be truthful, and it will come out.
There you go. So, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you have a next book? Judith already mentioned that her one book is going to be two. How about you?
Right. I'm writing a book now. I'm about 20%, you know, into it, about living as an adult with scoliosis.
With the same situation.
I elected to not have surgery. So I've been told by several doctors to prepare for an uncomfortable end to your life,
mm-hmm.
as far as suffering from the age, you know, for mm-hmm. my later years, and I elect to not accept that. So I continue to play racquetball. I continue to be active as possible. I continue to eat correctly. I continue chiropractic care. I feel great.
Well, you proved them wrong once. You might as well do it again, right?
So that's the next one.
Well, Brad, if people want to be in contact with you, get a copy of your book, talk with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Okay. My website is www.drbradschmidt.com. That's drbradschmidt.com. All my information's on there. You can purchase the book on the website. My email's on there if you have any concerns or questions about anything. You can contact me there.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, this is where I open up the mics. If you each want to ask other questions, let me just say, I'll even invite Andy to jump in if he wants. not that he ever needs encouragement. But one of the things I want to say to both of you is to thank you for saying just right. And what I really appreciated was you both indicated in your own way, this was not something you jumped on with, oh boy, here I go. It was, what me? And that's really a powerful perspective.
Right.
I'm looking at Andy.
Oh, okay.
He has deer in headlights look. You've been quiet the whole time. What do you got
going?
Well,
I know. Well, we opened it up for them to talk, yeah. and then you pitch it to me, so I'm fumbling the ball here. Noah, actually, I do have some questions for you guys to kind of get the ball rolling, and feel free to banter with each other. But, Judith, one question I have for you is, what do you say to people when you talk about these angelic experiences? It seems like there's a divide when it's very miraculous, when there's like this outstanding event, it's too supernatural. People can't embrace it. And when it's too simple, they tend to write it off to coincidence. What do you say to those people about how to perceive events in their life and the intervention potentially of angelic beings in our day-to-day activities?
Well, that's a great question.
In my mind,
there's these two avenues, the natural and the supernatural. And I know that coincidences happen in life, and things happen in the natural, spontaneous healing. Circumstances that were beyond our control can suddenly shift. And that's kind of what I think about in the natural. But in the supernatural, and of course, our thought at Christian Healing Ministries is that we have lost so much of our inheritance that came through Jesus, you know, through the scripture, of a supernatural God, and that happened kind of, you know, in the Dark Ages and the Age of Reason coming on. And if you couldn't see it, touch it, taste it, handle it, then it's not real. So that all of us in different, especially in Western cultures, we've lost touch with the supernatural. And so I felt like the reason angels intervene on these little simple ways and in grand ways is because God is trying to restore the supernatural realm to his kingdom. I believe very much in the kingdom of God being here on earth. And that so we at Christian Healing Ministries, of course, teach about healing. We teach about the supernatural. We pray for people. We see them healed all the time. And angels are just part of that. So there's the natural and the supernatural. But most people in today's culture, especially, as I said, in Western European, not so much in third world countries, they believe very much in supernatural. But unfortunately, it can get really out there sometimes into bizarre. So did that answer your question? That was
I think that was a great answer. Let me take that to another direction here. Do you guys think there's a tendency in our society to take the negative or the disbelieving side of things? I mean, you know, Brad, I'm listening to your story, and sounds like most of your life you were told you can't. The air of caution was on the side of, oh, you can't do that.
Right. Well, I think that, speaking about, the abilities that I have and what I was told I was not. I think I got to a point in my life where I was just so tired of being told I can't do things that I know I'll never be a football player. I know that I can climb a tree, but I know I'll never be a professional boxer. You know, there's things that I have boundaries on, but I'm thankful for what abilities I have and that I respect Judith's opinion, angle on things as far as I'm glad that these occurrences happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know what they are sometimes. I don't know. 'Cause I've had people say, come at me from a religious angle, come at me from another angle, come at me from you're just lucky, come from a medical angle. I don't know, but it happened.
It happened.
That I don't know what you call it, but it happened. So I don't want to get tied up in what angle it happened, you know, what definition or whatever. But mm-hmm. I just think these miracles or angels or events,
mm-hmm.
Positive outcomes happen for a reason.
Yeah. And when I met you, Brad, and Judith, when I read your stuff and have been familiar with Christian Healing Ministries for so long, I thought, you know, these are two people mm-hmm. with a similar story in that we can do. No is not really the option here.
Right, right.
And it happens.
Uh-huh.
You've got, I'm sure, Judith, you were resonating with Brad's story when he was saying, you know, no is not an option. We can do this. Nobody told me I can't walk.
I love right. this story. I love right. his spirit.
Thank you
know, I heard John Wimber say one time, who's a great friend of ours in the healing ministry, and I know you can appreciate this, both of you, all three of you.
Mm-hmm.
He said that God designed the body to heal itself.
Absolutely.
And he said if we just give the body some room, it's very resilient, just like the human mind and the human spirit. And where God chooses to remain anonymous sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. we just don't even know where he's working sometimes or how he's working. But I do know, like our son recently pulled a muscle exercising. He lives up in New York City. Of course, we've been praying with him every day on the phone, and every day he says it's getting better. And I just rely on that so heavily, the prayer, but also God designed this miraculous creation of our bodies to really heal itself if mm-hmm. we'll give it the space and the time.
Sure,
but also, absolutely. What a great spirit you have, you know, that you were able to say, I'm not going to take no for an answer anymore. I'm young, I want to do these things, and I'm going to keep trying, you know, where some people would have given up, maybe.
Sure, sure. Thank you.
I
run across it constantly, almost daily, of uh-huh. people that have challenges that friends and my racquetball community, and I was just at a tournament this weekend, and people were telling me how bad they feel and how this and how that and the economy
yeah.
and the president. I mean, it was endless, endless complaints. And I said, you know, I feel great. I tend to keep the complaints to a minimum. I mean, I'm only human, but
yeah.
a lot of things don't bother me anymore. And I just try to stay focused on what you know, moving forward. Mm. And helping others at the same time, trying to talk them out of that negative life, because just people want to take a pill for every little thing that comes along.
Yes.
They don't give their bodies a chance to combat that or, you know, make things right, because the body is an incredible machine. So,
well, you know, the amazing thing is the clock is on us. It happens every week. I to be honest with you, I'd never dreamed we'd go this long.
Yeah.
There, you know, I go in with this visceral feeling. Judith mm-hmm. and Brad, you have been great. I am so appreciative. Yeah, we welcome comments and suggestions about the content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for handling the controls, keeping us on air.
Always a pleasure. I think we're off to a great season 2 start.
I think we are. And thank you to our guests, Judith McNutt and Brad Schmidt, Brad Schmidt. Judith, your contact information one more time.
Yes, it's ChristianHealingMen.org, or our phone number is 904-765-3332.
Okay.
We're also on Facebook, Christian Healing Ministries.
Okay. And Brad, your contact information.
Yes, it's drbradschmidt.com, www.drbradschmidt.com.
Okay.
Okay.
Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. I encourage you to send them an email and invite them to listen to us live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at rightherightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.